Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the West London Sport QPR podcast. I'm joined again by Kevin Gallen as we look back on last Saturday's fine win over Middlesbrough at the Riverside Stadium. Now, we were scheduled to do a pod last Thursday, but the boss said that doing it before the transfer window closed was perhaps not the best idea, as anything can happen in the next 24 hours, making anything we say out of date. So, in true Sod's Law fashion, nothing happened. We've no one coming or going from Gareth Ainsworth's squad, which, given what we discussed in our last edition, was something of a surprise. But however, since we last spoke, Kev, the team have produced very encouraging performances, going down narrowly 2-1 to Southampton in a game they really should have won, and then followed up by the win of a Borough side who really look a pale shadow of the team that made the playoffs last season. So, Kev, we'll go into the window in a bit, but firstly, I think it's perhaps only fair to give some credit to Gareth Ainsworth for getting a tune out of Andre Dizel, who's played pretty well the last few weeks and scored a cracking goal on Saturday.
Yeah. Unbelievable goal, unbelievable strike from distance. No keeper in the world saving that. Hopefully he can produce a few more like that this season. Because is that his first goal in? Or is it his first goal? Yeah, so it's, for an attacking sort of midfield player, or a passer, or a creator, this is long overdue. So great goal, credit to him and credit for the team for a really fine win against Middlesbrough, who are struggling, but that don't matter. You got to, whoever, whatever team you play, and you get a win, you got to get your pats on the back and a well done. So well done to everyone. It's a great great win, and it's always a great win to go into the, you know, the international window and 2 weeks. Sort of, you know, you're on a high where if you lose, you're like always looking over your shoulder and thinking, oh, could have done this better, could have done that better. Did we pick the right team? I didn't play that well. Just everything will go through your head. So to get a win going into the international window is a really good thing. And so I think I wasn't there. I watched the highlights. Begovic made some really good saves to keep Middlesbrough at bay. And then Andre Dizel hits a worldie from distance, and then Colback with his 2-2 games, who he himself is not a prolific goal-scoring midfield player. So, well done to those two midfielders helping out the team, because you can't always rely on the strikers to score goals. And if the strikers ain't scoring goals, you need players from everywhere else on the pitch to chip in.
Perhaps as well, I mean, myself in particular, I felt they were a little bit short in midfield, because I had written off Dizel, really. You know, he hadn't shown to me enough to suggest that he had in his locker. They paid a lot of money for him 2 years ago, and he always seemed to struggle. He looked a little bit kind of not athletic enough to play in a two-man midfield. But, you know, again, the manager, he's put him almost in front of two defensively minded midfielders, and perhaps that was the key to getting the best out of him. So I suppose, you know, working with what you got is as much as management as anything else. And, you know, hopefully for him, that will sort of be the start of, you know, growing in confidence and becoming the player that, you know, QPR thought they'd be getting when they signed him for Mitrovic for like, I think it's 1.2 million.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. And especially it's a lot of money now thinking about it because we haven't got much to spend at the moment. But yeah, I think we talked about it and I talked about it when we played, I think, Coventry at the end of last season, where we only played two in midfield and we got completely overrun. And I will see that QPR will be, I think we're better with a three-man midfield. And no disrespect to anyone, but if you're playing a two-man midfield, you need real good legs in there for closing down and getting around the pitch. Sam Field is a good midfielder, holding midfielder, but he's not that type. He's not a run-around chase. He's a hold position, read-the-game type player. And I haven't seen Colback, but he's an experienced pro. He's played at the highest level, and he's got a lot of games under his belt. So most teams now play with three in midfield. So I think you've got to match them up because you don't want to get dominated, which we did the last two home games of the season. We got dominated in midfield against Coventry and Bristol City. And it looks like Ainsworth has sort of learned from that. You're playing a three-man midfield. You've got to match them up because those two games, we got completely dominated possession-wise and we just couldn't get near those midfields. So Dzel, obviously, like you said, he isn't the greatest off the ball and closing down and making tackles. His strengths are in his passing. And so just moving maybe 10 yards forward up the pitch helps him and helps the team.
And I suppose just looking, you know, back out the window, I mean, Gareth Ainsworth was reasonably frank about it, sort of saying it was unlikely anyone was going to come in, and that was the case. But they are perhaps looking at free agents and players that may be available to sign after the window's closed. But I thought they might bring someone in on loan. I think some calls were made, but it does seem that clubs just want a lot of money for loan players now. And from what, you know, Gareth was saying in his pre-match ahead of the Borough game last week, that, you know, perhaps last year some of the loan players came in. There's been a lot of loan players that perhaps when you need all hands to the pump, maybe they weren't as being hands on to the pump as you'd like, really, when the team's struggling at the bottom. So I sort of understand why they haven't gone down that loan market. But I mean, Leeds on Friday, came in very late for Ilias Che. I've heard that from some people close at Leeds that I spoke to in the week, that, you know, they looked at it and Rangers sort of said, well, it's too late now, you know, we can't sign him. And, you know, that's always going to be the danger of in like a, you know, 11 p.m. on a Friday night transfer deadline. It's ludicrous, really. I know in Germany, where I know you do a lot of work, that they close the window at 5 p.m. because of Davermatt, the evening match day, which sort of makes sense, really. But
well, it would have been interesting to see if Leeds made that bid the day before, because if you're making a bid at 11 p.m., unless you've got someone literally lined up to come in as a replacement, you don't just sort of sell one of your best players. I know I don't know what the money was, but then there's a case of Leeds come in. It's like the domino effect. Leeds come in, QPR sell. They've got someone lined up. So they go to, I don't know, Middlesbrough for an attacking midfield player at 11 o'clock. We've got this amount of money. We'll bid for him. Do you know what I mean? And then they're saying, well, hold on a minute. We ain't got a replacement. And it's all... So it's like, what do you do? Unless it's an outrageous amount of money where you just give it, well, we can't turn that down. I think it's a bit poor from Leeds, really, just making a bid that late. I mean, they were really serious. Leeds might have been after someone themselves, and that got knocked down, knocked back at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and they're thinking, well, we need an attacking sort of number 10, left side attacking midfielder. Who have we got? And then they'll go to their head of recruitment. Well, he's good. So they'll have a list. There's my number one. Yeah. There's my number two. There's my number three. Ilias Che might be number two or number three. We don't know, because their number one said, no, I ain't coming. Or they couldn't do a deal with the club. And it's just a snowball effect. And it just QPR in right to turn that down.
And I think as well, I mean, I get asked a lot by people like, who arranged your signing? And I'll usually say, well, they don't know, which is usually the case. And that's not a dig at QPR, but as you outline there, you don't. There's so many dominoes have to fall in the right place. I mean, the Sam Field move happened. I remember it. It was a game at Watford. They beat Watford 2-1. Mark Warburton was manager. And I think it happened at 10 to 11 that night. On a Monday night it was. And none of us have really heard of Sam Field. And you go, well, who's Sam Field? And I don't think I'm betraying any confidence by saying I don't think Sam Field was top of QPR's list of signing players when they went to the start of the window. But things come up. This player's available. You know, his pedigree of being in England under 20 international, kind of okay. And you know, there's relationships between directors of football and chair. It happens. That's what we're
manager will go to head of recruitment and say, well, I need this profile of a player. Who have you got? So, in regards to Sam Field, I want a 6'1" centre midfielder, holding midfield player. Who you got on the list? And the head of recruitment at any club will go, well, I've got him. He might be too expensive, but this, and it all goes on. But there's so many factors off when you're signing a player. It's like people will say, well, why didn't we sign him? Well, maybe that player didn't want to come, for one. So you've got that. So one, he has to come. He has to want to come, some whatever player. Two, the club have to agree with the other club a fee. Now, if that club can't afford it, then that's out the window. Then if you go past all that, then the club and the player have to, whatever, agree on wages. So there's so many factors that and permutations of signing a player. It's not just, I was just sign him. It's, well, hold on. If that was the case, everyone would just go and try and sign Haaland because he's the best goal scorer. Yeah, we've got no money. Okay, well, we can't get it. But there's so many different factors in signing a player. And when it comes down to the last hours of deadline day, you know what I mean? Then it's a panic. And that looks to me, Leeds have had a panic up. And so and tried, probably thinking, we'll try it with QPR. Knowing QPR at the moment are a little bit, you know, not flush with cash, and they tried it on.
And it's credit to Chair as well that, you know, he probably deserves a move. If you take it off, you know, you keep your fans' hat off and looking at it as a kind of, you know, pragmatically, he you know, he's been a good servant to QPR. Perhaps deserves a move to a bigger club. But I mean, as a professional, I think he's been outstanding. His attitude, he got on with it, played very well against Middlesbrough on Saturday. He was involved in build up to a couple of the goals. And I think he will get his move eventually, because I mean, I know you look at a lot of players in your role as a scout. Would that go into your thinking as well? He hasn't had a move, but how he reacts in the next game, is that the truth? Does that all factor into
profile? A lot of factors when you're watching players is attitude and work rate, and you don't want to see players waving their arms when they lose the ball or someone don't pass the ball to them. And to be fair to Ilias Chair, he's got really good work rate. He looks fit, he tries, and, you know, fair play to him. He's, whether or not he wanted that move to Leeds or not, we don't know. He performed on the Saturday and performed well, like you said. But he might not even want to go to Leeds. He might be, there's always so many things behind the scenes with agents and stuff, and I don't know how long has he got left on his contract. Has he got 2 years?
Yeah.
So I'd be very surprised if Ilias Chair's at QPR next season, because they're either going to have to sell him with a year, because that's when the prices keep coming down. Do you know what I mean? When you've got a year left in your contract, the price of the player comes down, because no one wants their good players or star players going into the last year of their contracts. So they're even going to have to offer him a new contract, like they did with Lyndon Dykes, or they're going to have to sell him in January or the end of the season. Because at the end of the day, you need that money to then go and reinvest in the squad.
With the window then, Kev, obviously, I mean, when you were a player, I guess, I mean, it used to be, there wasn't really a transfer window. There was one in March, wasn't there? But I mean,
I'm not that old, Ian.
No, but like, was the transfer window always...
When I first started, it was like the end of March. It was the transfer window, and then it was what was it, like the mid-March or end of March, and then that was no more signings. You could do signings throughout the whole season until, is it end of March?
Yeah, it was. It was sort of around, mid-end of March, wasn't it? Yeah.
I think 6 weeks to go to the end of the season, there was like, that was it, no more signings. It actually reminds me when Ray Harford was manager and we were sort of struggling a bit. And on transfer deadline day, he signed Vinnie Jones, Ian Dowie, and Neil Ruddock, which didn't really work out, but it was a good laugh.
You stayed up anyway.
But we had some good nights out. You know, the transfer window now is, obviously we know it's August and it finishes in August and then finishes in January. So it is, there's always like rumours, and if someone's on real form, there's people looking, and it can be very disruptive for the team. And I'm sure it's very disruptive for not only the manager, but the fans as well, because you don't want to see your best players leaving your football club and then you can't replace them. Or you do replace them and they're not as of the quality of the ones that have left. So it's a difficult one. I always like to feel that football clubs should do their transfer business like May, June and July. Get them embedded in pre-season. Get them into the philosophy of what the manager and the club is all about. But there is all the odd time, because you need to make signings maybe at deadline on the last week. Because you might have an injuries that happened the week before and the game before. And, oh, my centre-half's out for a season now. I need another centre-half. Do you know what I mean? So it's a difficult one.
Yeah.
But I don't really... I know we didn't sign anyone and maybe we haven't got the funds to sign anyone. And maybe they were thinking, well, Ilias Chair might go, but it was too late. And we might have some funds there to go and bring other players in different positions. Mm. But obviously it didn't happen because it was 11 o'clock at night on a Friday night. It was taking a mick.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like when football's becoming, you know, largely due to the transfer window and also the financial fair play, it's become almost like as much an accounting exercise as a recruitment exercise, because, you know, this window of like, you've got 3 years, you can lose a certain amount of money over a 3 year period. And once you're in that last year of the 3 years, which is what QPR are in at the moment, I understand.
Yeah.
They're in the final year of the 3 year of what they can lose. So potentially next year they'll have more money to spend because it's the start of a new, you know, and you haven't looked at what's happened to Derby and Reading and Sheffield Wednesday, all these clubs being dot points and that. It's almost become a skill in sort of making the accounts stand up so you don't lose points. And then, I mean, this is even the Premier League as well. You've got Premier League clubs sort of hedging a little bit and sort of saying, well, you know, I know that, well, Brentford, for example, Thomas Frank last week was moaning in his press conference that, you know, are all clubs following FFP because they're getting blown. You know, he was saying they were sort of looking at, he was referring to Brennan Johnson and Chelsea, Tottenham sort of blew him out the water in what they could offer him and in terms of wages and stuff like that. But it's almost becoming, because of the transfer window and this desire to spend loads of money in January and in August, that teams are now sort of having to reassess how they do things. And I know, obviously, you work for Palace, you know, and looking at markets in Germany and stuff like that. I mean, how much of that comes down to with what you have to do in how you look at a player? Because obviously, Haaland's not going to sign for Palace, is he? Because they can't afford. But
you have to sort of know. It's got to sort of know the level, because we're not. It's like QPR. We're not going to go and sign someone from Liverpool. So you're not going to go sell players from Bayern Munich. It's not really going to happen. So you've got to find the level and the wages and speak to the people that work at the club. At, you know, how much money we got to spend? What's our sort of limit on certain positions? Will we go above a certain wage, or will they go a certain transfer for a right backs, for instance? Or, you know, we'll spend more on a centre forward than we'll sign on a left back. So I sort of just, when we go out there, you've got to sort of talk. I know what the sort of wage, not the wage, the transfer fee is, and then you sort of go back to the head of recruitment or the director of football, and you tell him, and then he'll say, yeah, he's a bit out of our range, and you go, okay, I'll go on. You go on to the next one. So it's more just monitoring everything. And that's what the scouts at QPR hopefully should be doing, is you monitor everything. And then you speak to the agents as well. And that's not what I do, but the people who are director of footballs will speak to the agents and see what the lad is like and maybe speak to him. I'm sure it happens, but, you know, speak to the agent, speak to the lad anyway, and get a feel for what his attitude is like and does he want to come? What his wage demands are and stuff like that. So it's like, so, you know, recruitment is, I think, probably is the most important part of a football club. If you get your recruitment right, you're going to do all right. And I sort of go back to when I played for QPR and that season when we got promoted in 2003, 2004, and the years prior to that, the recruitment was really good. You know, this is a prime example. We sell Richard Langley to Cardiff, and with the money with that, we get in Ainsworth, Rowlands, and Kevin McLeod. That's good recruitment.
Mm.
And that gave us a better push to get promoted, which we did.
Mm.
So that's real good recruitment. You sell one player and you get three in. And, well, Martin Rowlands was an excellent signing. He was, a mainstay at QPR for 7-8 years after that, maybe more.
Great player, yeah.
Right midfield, centre mid. And the good thing about them, those lads, they had real good attitudes. Mm. Martin Rowlands was a winner. Gareth was a winner. Kevin McLeod was a little bit up and down, but he had ability. And if Martin Rowlands was playing on the left and Gareth was playing on the right, or one of them got injured, Rowley would go to the right and Kevin McLeod would then come on the left. So that's good recruitment.
How much as well, Gareth Ainsworth is constantly saying, you know, he's obviously bought Cook and Colback, Steve Cook and Jack Colback, as a senior, but almost to run the dressing room.
Yeah.
How important, obviously every manager is going to say, I want good eggs, I want good characters, but that is almost better not to sign someone you think maybe is a great player, but could upset the dressing room.
Yeah. I mean,
that fine balance is,
you can have one maybe. I mean, I'm going back on like QPR again. I mean, Tarapt wasn't a great egg, was he? But he was a match winner. Mm. And supposedly, you probably heard the story. We've all heard the story. Warnock has gone to Sean Derry, Clint Hill, Paddy Kenny and the senior pros. He said, look, I know he ain't going to track back. I know he's going to throw his arms in the air, but he can get us promoted. Help. You've got to help me here. He can get us promoted. He's that good.
Mm.
And in the end, he managed it so well, he did. But I bet he was, you can't have too many of them in your team. You can have one and then you can manage him, because then at the end, the manager's just going to be concerned about a couple of those players and forgetting about the rest of them. But regarding Cook and Colback, they're senior pros. They've played in the Premiership. They've had promotions. You don't want the manager in the one thing you don't, and every good manager I played under never rarely came into the players' changing rooms. The manager wanted to see you, he'll bring you into the office. Or he might poke his head into the changing room and say, Kevin, can you see me? But they would never hang around the changing rooms. No manager does that. No good manager does that. They just let the changing room get on with it. And the players don't want the manager in there, because that's where everyone's having banter and messing about. And you just don't want your boss in there, do you? I don't think anyone wants their boss hanging around them.
Yeah. And I think as well, again, they're having to bring these young kids in, like Coley's coming in as an 18-year-old, and he's almost bypassed the 21 team, straight into the first team. That's a massive jump for a young player. But those formative years of being around kind of good senior pros, I mean, that's sort of priceless for him, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, not only being around them, but obviously training with them is training with, like, this, your senior pros. You learn so much, and he'll be, I'm sure, those senior pros like Begovic. I mean, you talk about Colback and Cook, but you've got Begovic there as well, who's seen it and done it and played at some big football clubs. They'll be putting their, well, they should be putting their arm around them, giving them advice. I was very lucky when I was coming through. You had Ray Wilkins, you had Alan McDonald, Ian Holloway, Les Ferdinand there. You know, you could go to for advice and they would give advice, or you just watch what they did and watch how they trained and how they conducted themselves. So it's very important for young lads to have good older pros to look up to and to learn from. Mm. So important.
And just in terms of back when you were playing, do you have any sort of memories of, you know, transfer deadline sort of moves, not necessarily you, but other players that looked like going to happen, didn't happen, and, you know, how players get around it? I mean, what's it like? What's transfer deadline like for players? I mean, are they like everyone else, checking phones, checking Sky?
They'll have Sky Sports on and they'll all be looking, and in the morning before at breakfast and afternoon at lunch, oh, he's gone here, and everyone's gossiping. It's very similar to what the fans are doing. Like, fans will be down the pub watching it. Oh, he's gone here. Oh, there's no difference. It's just a different environment. They're in a football club and they're all looking, oh, he's gone here. That's a good move. But then, it's a snowball effect. If someone wanted to move, I remember sort of Danny Shitt, who was on the verge of a move and he got it in the end, and he was going here and he was going to go there and end up he went somewhere else. But it's like, you know, a club would be saying, just say, for instance, Ian, we're going to sign you, but you're a centre-back and we have to let a centre-back go. And then you come out in from training and you see that team who just said, we're going to sign you, oh, they've just sold their centre-back. And now you're thinking, I could be going here. And it's all that like gossip and it's all in your head and checking your phones and ringing agents. But that's if you're like, want to leave, or the club want you to leave, as in there's going to be a big offer and they're not going to stand in your way. But if you've got like 2 or 3 years in your contract and you're quite settled, you're just like, you're watching it and you're looking at it and seeing if it's any good and you're enjoying it. But if you're settled and you want to stay, you don't really get involved in it.
Yeah. When you had that first season, when you sort of broke in the QPR first team, I mean, if you were playing in the era now, you could probably be valued at like,
I've been doing that on the training pitch.
But
sorry, Gaffer, I just got a phone call from me.
But did you ever have any moves that sort of like, you know, rumours and agents and sort of this might happen, that might happen, and nothing ever happened?
There was a lot of rumours, but I didn't have an agent. So there was a lot of rumours, as in paper talk and stuff. But I was sort of so happy at QPR.
Mm.
We were like playing well. We had a good team. I was like thinking, I remember like in the back page of the Sun and the Mirror, like Ferg's Man United, 5 million. And I was like thinking, well, I don't really want to go. I'm happy here. So you hear all the rumours and I didn't have an agent. I was happy at QPR. We were doing well. We had a good team. So it would be a lot different now, because now kids have got agents at 15, 16, and I would probably be the same, and they can create moves. Agents can create moves anyway in the head. Some agents, there's some good agents and there's some bad agents, just like every walk of life. And they're interested in that, not necessarily the player's football career.
Yeah, interesting. But okay, then. Well, thanks a lot, Kev. I went down. We're talking about the young players. I took my kids down to watch the development team on Monday. That's the summer holidays ground to a halt finally, and they went back to school. So Monday, yeah. Good. It's good. I've seen them a couple of times.
Happy days. They're back to school.
Happy days. Yeah. It was good. They won 2-0, beat Fleetwood, and I've seen them a couple of times this season. And I recommend. Yeah, I kind of recommend people go down to Hamwell and watch them when they're playing down there. It's a nice little evening. They play Monday nights. It's a nice little ground. You can get, you know, beer and chips and kids can run around. It's good. And, you know, yeah. I know that it's been some thin gruel coming out of the sort of academy teams in recent years. But there's a couple of one or two that are playing up a level, which there's one lad, Kieran Petrie, who I know they got come through at Arsenal, I think. And, You know, he scored in the Youth Cup win over Tottenham last year, and there's Rafa Ipeda and Stephen Ballas. So there's some good young players coming through. But just, Kev, just to touch on before we go, like, you know, I know it's you reserve team football. You kind of take it, you know, the whole idea is to get players into the first team. And, yeah. I mean, but for those lads coming through, it's quite a big thing, isn't it? You know, the team's doing well there, but they're, Burnley have moved their match against QPR to Turf Moor on Saturday because there's no fixtures. So to get people in the watch, is that? I mean, it's kind of mildly encouraging seeing players coming through.
Yeah, but regarding Burnley doing that, that's excellent for not only the Burnley team but the QPR team. If I was playing for that, if I was a young lad and Burnley did that, I'm like, think I'm playing at our main ground. There's going to come in to be a crowd there. You're like really excited. You'd be like, I'm going to try you always try your best, but you get that a little bit more extra excitement. So that's very good. And like you said, you know, when it was the football combination when I played, and we used to, sometimes we play at the ground, but then sometimes we played at Harrah-Burrah, and there was always QPR fans, the hardcore fans would come down and watch. And it's always good to have fans there. And you're sort of in the shop window, the higher you play, and if you play well, the higher the level, you're in the shop window. There's always scouts going to be there. Your manager's going to be there.
Mm.
And I would just say to every young player, whatever game you play in or training, you're always being watched. You're always being scouted. And I'd sort of say to some kids, say to me, oh, can you get me a trial? Do you know when someone will say, can you get me a trial at this club or that club? I say, you're on trial every game. Even like in the first team, you're on trial. If you play poorly, you're out of the team.
Yeah.
If you play really well, you might get a move to like a real Premiership team. So you're always on trial. Mm. And if you're like an England international, you're on trial to keep your place in the England squad. It's just constant. Everyone's watching. Everyone's talking. Everyone's saying, oh, he's a good lad. He's a good player. He's got a good attitude. Because when they will go to sign someone, they'll ring up previous managers. What's he like? What's he like training? What's he like in the dressing room? Yeah, good lad. Yeah, take him. That's how football was, a small world.
Yeah. And I think we deserve that. The people I always find are good to talk to. You know, there are the diehards who go to all the reserve games, watch them regularly, and, you know, and they'll tell you, no, there's no one really. But, you know, the two lads I spoke to on Monday, we're both saying, yeah, there's a couple in here. We've got a chance that, you know, best I've seen for about sort of 6-7 years, there might be a couple here that, you know, you might. No, I think the line, the best I've seen since the SH chair times when they were there. So that's, you know, I mean, you don't want to put these kids under pressure, and there's a lot of kind of expectation, and, you know, but it's sort of, it's where QPR need to be, you know, need to be getting these kids coming through and making
they need to, yes, with this financial, like you said about the fair financial fair play for everyone. You need your academy to produce players, especially if you're paying money, a lot of money. I mean, QPR have spent a lot of money on their academy, but also on the training ground. So they need to produce. And there is something in, if you sell someone that's homegrown, it gives you a lot of leeway in the financial fair play. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why the Nottingham Forest sold Brennan Johnson. Right. Then they can go out and spend treble of what they... So if they sell them for 40, you can spend then 100. There's something in it. Next week, I'll ask someone properly to explain it to me. But there is something. If you sell a homegrown player, you then can spend more money and you've got more leeway with financial fair play.
We should perhaps explain why Chelsea are just selling all their young players.
Yep.
Yeah.
Something in it. That's a little job for you, Ian, during the week.
Right. Well, thanks a lot, Kev, and thanks for joining us all again. And sorry for the delay in getting out, but we'll hopefully see you again next week. And as I say, like, subscribe, leave some messages on YouTube. Try and make them nice if you can, but if you're not happy, then there's not much you can do about it. But enjoy. We'll speak to you soon. Have a good weekend.
Cheers.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.